Live to play another game. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne, bottom of the hour, Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night. And from 31 Thoughts, we'll be aboard. In the meantime, we have lots to talk about last night. Some news breaking moments ago. Seattle Kraken filling out their coaching staff. Dave Haxtell, as we all know, is the head coach. Today, they have officially announced the hiring of Jay Leach, formerly head coach of the Providence Bruins, and Paul McFarland, who had been with the Kingston Frontenacs of the OHL, and of course was behind the bench in an assistant capacity with the Toronto Maple Leafs. More on these news stories in a couple of moments, and we'll start the campaign to get Stewie to Kingston. Back to the scene of many junior hockey conquests. Should we say both on and off the ice, Stewie?
Yes, and it's a big loss for the Frontenacs there. And again, he hasn't coached a game there since coming back from the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I'm sure they'll do their due diligence and fill the team with a good young coach. But it's good to see young guys get that opportunity. And Paul was with Florida, he was with Toronto, went back and get another opportunity. Yep. So it's good to see these young guys get a great opportunity and show what they can do.
What do you think, Justin, before we get to the game last night?
You know, that's great. You know, he's got well-rounded experience now for a young guy, and he's a really smart person and a super hard worker, very diligent, very serious guy.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually thinking about this in the wake of seeing his name and getting another NHL crack, just how in the NHL circles and in coaching in general, I feel like we value seriousness a lot. Is that fair to say? Like, I feel like it's only after guys are established and around the NHL a long time do they earn the right to show their lightness, like a yes. Bruce Boudreau as he gets older, or maybe Paul McLean, Barry Trotz we see a little bit, but like it's you never see a young guy having a couple of yucks. It's like we need them to be hyper serious or something when they're younger.
That's true about the players. Like, that's not just coaches. That's not just managers. That's the players, too. Like, look at all these kids coming into the draft every year. They look like a combination of serious and terrified. Like, terrified to say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing, laugh at the wrong thing. I mean, I understand they're in that transition between, you know, being boys and becoming men. But isn't that true of the athletes, too? Like, that's not just coaches or managers. That's at every single level, isn't it?
It is, and I'll be honest, it's one of the things that I don't love about hockey culture, that like the lack of acceptance that, you know, you can control what you can control and work as hard as you can work. That doesn't mean you can't have a personality in the process or laugh at things. I had a problem with it as a player too, because I generally wasn't someone that was hyper serious. So it's a long running complaint of mine with hockey.
Stewie, were you always Mr. Serious?
No, I said maybe that's my problem. That's why I probably dropped a couple spots in the draft. I remember being at the top prospects game, and I had the most goals at the time. And I'm like, life is great. I was eating popcorn behind the fans, out of fans' bag. So I'm sure the scouts didn't like that one. But you got to have fun. If you take yourself too seriously, you're 100%. Not going to move on that far. It's good being a good team guy.
100%. Okay, move along to the big story, which is last night, and the even bigger story, which is Game 5, if there is a Game 5, on Wednesday. We'll get into that with Elliot Friedman at the bottom of the hour. But 3-2 is the final. Josh Anderson bookends this game. Tampa dominates the first period, but Josh Anderson scores. There's a four-minute high-sticking penalty called on Shea Weber. Montreal kills it off. The power play goes from the third period into overtime, and it is Josh Anderson. After Nick Suzuki, by the way, almost ended it himself shorthanded, Josh Anderson ends it. 3-2 is the final score. There will be a Game 5 on Wednesday. Stewie, your thoughts on what we saw last night before we start to drill down on some of the periods, some of the plays, and some of the players?
Yeah, it was definitely great resiliency from the Montreal Canadiens, and it goes back to people questioning why did they make it, because they do not have that quit, never say die attitude. And going into that overtime, I'm like, oh man, people were worried about, you know, if that game was going to be done fairly early into overtime. But I said, no, their penalty kill has been their strength. It's been their rallying cry around the whole entire playoff series. And you'd see Shea Weber in the penalty box, you know, thinking the series is over, but they stepped up and got it done too. So they were the first star of the night. But Josh Anderson, just seeing him that game that he had last night, it almost makes you upset because you want to see it every single shift. Just that speed that he, you know, showed. He's definitely earned that name, Power Horse. So it's a great game by the Montreal Canadiens. This series is far from over. Regardless of what Borny says, they have that resiliency. I think it's going to help them in Game 5.
You know, I think certain teams are built a way to take advantage of breaks. And, like, Montreal has got some breaks along the way. Last night, I mean, the number of posts Tampa hit, particularly the one that Kucherov hit, backdoor tap in, 3 minutes left. You know, you don't see, how many times has he not put that one away? You know, but then not every team is able to take advantage of that. Montreal is a team that is able to capitalize on the other team's misses. You leave them in the game and you don't put them away, and they will come back. They are the woman at the start of the Austin Powers movie, the why won't you die? They just will not go away with the relentlessness. So give them credit for that.
But you know what that is, though, Borny? This is that this weird term that we don't like to talk about, and sometimes you just ride it, whether you're at the craps table in Vegas or playing an NHL game, and that is luck. And there are no teams in the history of the NHL that have not won the Stanley Cup without having a good share of luck on their side. Isn't that just it right now? The post, you know, the missing tap-ins, like...
I guess that's why I'm trying to say, like, they're built to capitalize on that and they don't go away, because, you know, I don't want to just say they've been lucky, but last night was a game that it felt like Tampa Bay did just about everything right. The puck, you know, they asked John Cooper after the game, what can you do better than you did tonight? And he was like, not hit as many posts. That was literally his answer after the game. Like, they were pretty content with the way they played last night.
What do you think, Stu?
Yeah, luck doesn't get you to the finals, and it doesn't get you to Game 5 as well. But I want to know where all the naysayers were when they took Kotkaniemi and made those lineup changes last night. Where are they praising him this morning? Because look at the game Romanov had. Kulak played good. Evans had an assist on the goal as well, too. So it was a pretty gutsy move taking out a good young player in Kotkaniemi, but it paid off. And that's what it's about. They're not afraid to make those big moves where other coaches in past in these playoffs were afraid to make those moves that Ducharme made. So kudos to him for making a big move, gambling, and having it pay off as well.
I don't know. I didn't like it. I didn't like that move. Not with someone like this Barry Kotkaniemi.
It's too late now.
I know, but I mean, if you want to, I said it at the time, say it now. I know they won the game. I just don't like the move for the long-term future of Barry Kotkaniemi with the Montreal Canadiens.
You just think for him personally and where his mental... Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, hey, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not sure, you know, how I would take to that as a young player. And I guess it depends on how they communicate to him their line of thinking and how much he agrees with that line of thinking there.
But I think it just goes back to, it just shows that this team is a team. And you see him in morning skate, and he's wearing his gray jersey, and I think Romanov got the tap, but he was going in, and you saw Kotkaniemi, he was happy for him. So I think there's this culture that they have within the team. It's not about ego, it's about the team as a whole. So it's good to see him too, but I'm sure once he gets back in, it's going to make him a better player.
You don't think that burns him? You don't think that's in the back of his mind, and it's going to be in the back of his mind for as long as he's a Montreal Canadian?
Not at this point.
Close out game, down three bagel, playing Tampa, and I got scratched.
No, you can't do the Denny Lemieux. It's too late, and at this point, you have to be happy for your team, happy for your group, and happy that they got the win. So the real question is he going to be in Game 5? I would be not surprised if he's out again.
What's the old saying, Borny? You'd never change a winning lineup.
And I disagree with that saying, but like right now, given the way the previous four games went, I think you got to leave it the same.
There are a couple of changes there, and Sui mentions Romanov in, Kulak in, Marilyn Gustafson out, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, that was the headline there. Jake Evans goes in for him. You know, as much as we'll talk about Anderson bookending the game, and Carey Price was real good too. Like, we talk about everything that Tampa threw at Montreal, specifically in the first period, where it looked like, you just look at game flow, Tampa's going to run all over Montreal, just steamroll this team. Carey Price was excellent. This was obviously his best game of the series. Up until this game, by his or any other standard, he had been subpar. But last night, Price was excellent and very much kept this team in a position where Josh Anderson can score in the first period and they take a 1-0 lead into the second. But true or false, Borny, we'll start with you. True or false, the best player on the ice for Montreal last night, without a doubt, Nick Suzuki.
Yeah, he was definitely he's such an essential piece of what they do. You know, I'm thinking of Josh Anderson and the plays that he made last night. Josh Anderson played like 14 minutes last night. It might have been 13-something, actually. So, you know, I think a lot of us are like, you know, his name comes to mind when you say who played best because he scored the goals, but he wasn't out there a whole ton. Suzuki is so versatile with what he does and how he contributes at both end of the rink. And you mentioned in the shorthanded play where he almost put the game away.
Oh.
Great opportunity and just happened to catch a piece of Vasilevsky's pillows there. But yeah, he's all over the rink for this team, and he continues to show how essential he is. Not afraid of the big moments, is he?
No, loves it, thrives. He just keeps on getting better and better. And we always mention Mini Bergeron. Stewie, your thoughts on Suzuki last night?
Yeah, and every time you say that, I sort of cringe a little bit, but I'm warming up to the idea that he is a little Bergeron because he pays attention to those little details. He's always on top of the puck. He has a great stick. How many times has he knocked like a drop sauce out of the air? How many times is he just breaking up those little plays, killing penalties, going to the net? And that assist that he had on the Anderson goal, that's an elite play. Borney, you and I, we're trying to go five hole and be the hero there. He's got the patience to go to his backhand, let it play out, and throw a backhand sauce, you know, through four or five guys. So I think it goes back to last year when he got that playoff experience. It definitely helped make him the player that he is today. And he's a big game player, and I would not be surprised in the next couple of years you're seeing him in that Selke conversation because just those little details of the game. And I wish there was fans in the stands because they would be hooting and hollering every time he makes one of those little plays, and he's going to be a star for this Montreal Canadiens team.
Yeah,
it's great that he's in Montreal. Sorry, Jeff. I just want to say it's great that he's in Montreal because they'll recognize the little stuff because they're such a smart fan base.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be that kind of player, be in a market where the fan base can appreciate it. And Montreal is one of those. Man, I'm gonna try to do this with a straight face here. So work with me, guys. It's going to be a little bit tough, but let me warm myself up into actually what I'm going to say here. This is going to be tough, and I'm going to do it with a straight face. The only unfortunate thing about the Montreal Canadiens winning in Game 4 to force a Game 5 was there was only 3,500 people in the building to watch it.
Yeah.
In the lower bowl?
Ah,
in the upper bowl?
Crap,
in which section?
I couldn't do it.
You know what's really funny is, like, what government body was going to go in there and challenge them and, like, count them and kick people out? Like,
Stop this game now, sir.
Yeah.
Like, but the worst part is DA's there and he's tweeting like, yeah, there's 8,000 people in there.
Straight up, 8,000. I was going
to
say the same thing.
They're going to call him to testify before the Congress in Quebec. On that day, tell us how many. He's going to end up going to jail for perjury because he's going, there's 3,500.
That's like you're in court and the judge says, we find you guilty, sir. Now walk out of here a free man. It's like, no, you can't have any more than 3,500 or we're going to do nothing about it. Now conduct yourself accordingly.
Like, I think the only way they could prove them is if they could, like, prove at the printing press they ordered, you know, 7,000 or something. Maybe they just left the back door of the arena open. They said, we're going to close our eyes and look the other way and just let
I have a
the
theory. I have a theory. Those lights are there to, when they go back to look at the footage, it's going to distort the image. That's why they put those lights in the stands there, in those other seats, those empty seats, to sort of distort it so they can't tell exactly how many.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I think that's just Quebec Health, just, you know, covering their eyes, covering their ears. No, I didn't even watch the game. I don't know. We told them 3,500. Yeah, you know, we're just going on the honor system here. We have faith in the Montreal Canadiens that they'll put no more than 3,500 people.
Speed limit's 50, but all the cops are going on vacation. See you later.
Yeah, that's right. Make sure you don't speed. A couple of other things here. Shea Weber yesterday, and you guys mentioned this a couple of seconds ago. I can only imagine what's going through Shea Weber's or any player in that situation's head when you're sitting in the box, double minor. You know he's just trying to lift Andre Palat's stick, but he catches him high and it opens him up, so it's going to be an extra two. I can only imagine what's going through his mind, how he's dying on every shot, every pass, every backdoor play, every zone entry by the Tampa Bay Lightning. I've never been in that position. I've got to think, though, Stewie, that has to be the worst feeling in the world, sitting in the penalty box as, you know, the leader on this team, thinking, I just did something that might cause our season to end. I have no idea what that feels like, but I'm guessing it doesn't tickle.
It's not a good feeling, and I think the whole entire world thought that they were going to score there, and you could see it on his face in the box, just very dejected. But I actually thought the refs weren't going to call it. I think they were debating if they were going to call it or not. I'm not too sure. I have to look back at the tape there. But I think the one solace that he had sitting there, that the other group of guys were going to do the job, and if there was one time the penalty kill can stand up and do it for him, I think it was that time too. So he definitely was not feeling great, but I'm sure Carey Price and the penalty kill crew said, hey, you know what, we're going to do it for this guy, because he has been, the best way to sum it up, he's been ruthless, he's been a killer, he's been like a young Chris Pronger out there, the way that he was just punishing guys too. And I've had a couple of run-ins with him in front of the net. He is a scary dude, and just to see him take it to a whole another level in the playoffs, it's definitely fun to watch, and I could definitely appreciate his game.
Yeah, I skated with him a number of times in Kelowna. He's just a mountain of a dude. It is intimidating for sure. The impressive part about that kill to me, Ben Chiarot and Joel Edmondson played the first 320 of overtime for the Montreal Canadiens last night, both of them, which, like, you know, that's a pretty incredible feat. I did see some people suggesting that maybe they shouldn't have called, Tampa shouldn't have called timeout, you know, and maybe got those guys off the ice. You got Weber in the box, the top two killers now coming off the rink. Maybe you're better off against Petrie and Romanov, who are the next two on the ice, and you let them keep those two killers on the ice for Montreal. So that could have been a tactical or error, depending on how you sit for strategy.
You know, Stu, you mentioned Weber and how physical he was in last night's game, and it seemed every time he was matched up against Braden Point, he was going at him hard. Caught him a couple of different times. That one play along the boards, I thought, wow, if he nails him on this one, we're not seeing Braden Point for the rest of the game. And then making it worse, Point gets hit from a Victor Hedman slap shot, which was going about a kajillion miles an hour. In a lot of ways, that game last night was, I don't want to say it's a signature game, because that's not a signature move by him towards the end of the third period with a high stick. But was that not kind of a signature Shea Weber game? Big body checks and big blasts from the point.
Absolutely, and I think he's got to be a little bit more accurate. He's missed a couple of those big shots where I think usually in years past they go in the net. But what's great about him, I think he just motivates his teammates and drags them into the fight. Not the fastest, not the strongest, not the most fleetest of foot, but he comes in and he plays every single night. So if I'm a younger guy sitting on that bench and I'm seeing this guy, you know, not the most talented, just, you know, thrive out there, that's definitely going to motivate me as a middle line guy or a younger guy too. So just the leadership capabilities, there's no questions who should be wearing the C, and he's probably one of the best leaders in the game right now, seeing how he's dragging this Montreal Canadiens team into the fight.
Sorry guys, my technology cut out for me in a minute there. What I missed?
Just talking about Weber. No, just talking about Weber's, just about Shea Weber's game. I was like, outside of sitting in the box there for the 4 minutes in the double minor, just with like the just trying to separate, you know, Braden Point's head from the rest of his body. I mean, he was going at him hard. And you know what? I'll tell you what, man. Good on Braden Point for not pulling up on anything, continuing to aggressively forecheck. Like, when you got someone like Shea Weber bearing down on you all game long, and he caught him. Like, he caught Point a couple of times. And for Point, like, he missed a couple of shifts, and Tyler Johnson jumped up on that top line with Kucherov while Point sat for a couple of shifts. But it didn't change Braden Point's game. So two things, I guess. Thought on Shea Weber's game last night, and thoughts on Braden Point.
I'll take the Weber's game point, and just in that, it seemed to be contagious. Like, once people saw him banging bodies, it was almost like, okay, that's going to be the personality of the team tonight. And you saw everyone starting to throw big hits. There was a run of hockey there where, you know, you didn't see Tampa Bay throw a hit, and they had the puck a lot, but every guy took a hard blow. They made a concerted effort to finish their checks on Nikita Kucherov, and that's kind of how it has to be. That, like, you may end up winning this series, but it's not going to be easy. And I thought that's the way that Montreal is going to have to play if they're going to be able to shut down Tampa Bay and make things close.
Yeah, and what's great about Point is that he skates through his checks. And, you know, I talk to my younger guys and the smaller frame players, like, you got to manage your bumps because it's a long series, 82 games. And just to be skating through your checks, absorbing all that contact as a smaller guy, I'm sort of a little bit worried about Point, but he seems that he's like almost like a little Mega Man out there, not really having it affect his game at all. So he's definitely a gamer, absolutely.
You know what I felt really good for last night, despite the fact that his team lost, was Matthew Joseph. Matthew Joseph is a Quebecer. Matthew Joseph on any other team in the NHL is probably playing on your second line. But on the Tampa Bay Lightning, this guy is in because Alex Killorn is out. That's just how deep Tampa is. I think Matthew Joseph is a hell of a hockey player. And Matthew Joseph playing in Montreal, that's got to be real special for him. That's got to be real special for his family. And that pass to Pat Maroon last night to make it 2-2, where all Maroon has to do is, I mean, Stewie, how many times have you told your players this? Go to the net, keep your stick down. That's all Pat Maroon had to do. And Matthew Joseph made a gorgeous play.
Now, Did it land?
What's that?
Of course it landed.
Yeah. The pass, I don't know if it ever landed.
We thought Maroon batted it out of the air?
Well, I think it may have hit the upper part of his blade. So I thought initially that it landed, and I got a bunch. I tweeted about it. And I got a bunch of responses that said it never landed. I think it did land, though. That's my conclusion.
But what's good about? Go ahead. I said, what's good about Matthew Joseph is, you know, he scored 12 goals this regular season, and he probably earned a spot in this lineup for opening day lineup. But he was obviously in the press box for the majority of these playoffs. And a lot of the coaches, they look at your body language. They look how you're interacting with the players in morning skate. They're looking at you in the press box. And I'm sure his body language was great that he earned this opportunity. And for him to step in and these two games in the playoffs, in the finals here, and get two assists on big, big goals, that just shows like what it's like to be a pro. So these younger guys, you're going to have bumps in the road. You're not going to have everything thrown at you all at once. You got to be a good pro and wait for your opportunity. Matthew Joseph now, he's shown that he's earned a spot. And people are talking about, oh, is he going to be in someone's top nine next year? Maybe he's in Seattle. But he's definitely an everyday NHL player. And those plays last night are showing why he's a great player as well.
He's an excellent player. And now, I have a question for you two guys. On that, essentially two-on-one, although there's a trailer on Pat Maroon. We'll call it a two-on-one. Did Romanov misplay that?
I guess you got to make the read on how covered Maroon is. Like if he thinks that he's getting some help there, then no. If he thinks Maroon is kind of in alone there, maybe he needs to defend against the pass a little bit more. Was that what you were seeing?
Yeah, I don't know. I look at that play and I say, it looks like and it feels like Romanov makes the wrong play and allows that pass. Like in that situation, my thought is, if you're Romanov, let the goalie take the shot. Whatever you have to do, make sure the pass doesn't get across. And he gambles and splays out, and the pass goes over to Maroon, and it's 2-2. But yeah. I don't know. Like, Stewie, you coach, is that the right play?
I think he thinks, you know, Maroon's got the piano backpack on, so there's no way he's getting open, and he's playing the percentages. Here's a guy that's been in and out of the lineup, and Joseph, most likely, he's going to shoot because there's nerves for him, and, you know, they tell the coaches, on a 2-on-1, make sure you get a shot off. So that's a pretty high-end skill play to throw a drop sauce over a stick. I think Romano played it perfectly. He went down, and he had his stick in a V there, too, but it was just a perfect pass. So I think that's more so a great play by Joseph than a bad play by Romano or a bad read. Let's get Juice on. Let's get BXL and let him assess it.
BXL.
Line six.
Fill 30 minutes on that play. Now, Romanov did score to make it 2-1 before that. So it's, you know, the good and the bad. Le bien, le mal, comme on dit en français. Romanov scores. We expect to see him back in the lineup on Wednesday. We don't expect any lineup changes, I would imagine, for Montreal. The only potential lineup change on either side is if Alex Killorn is good to go, he goes back in. But given how Matthew Joseph has played, I know it's a luxury to have to make a decision like this, but man, how do you take Matthew Joseph out? I know it's Alex Killorn, and Killorn is going to go in if he's good to go. But how do you take Matthew Joseph out here, Borny?
Would you take out?
Do you not
Ross
take someone
Killorn?
Else out?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you have to start looking around for sure. Very tough to take him out of the lineup at that point, but obviously Killorn's going in, so Yeah, you know, he made a great offensive play under pressure. To just touch on that again, you know, in general, when you got Carey Price in net, letting him take a shot without a pass across the crease is going to be the smarter play. So, you know, easy in hindsight to say he probably should have taken the pass away. But yes, Joseph is going to be a tough call for them, right? And that's great. If you're Tampa Bay, you love being in a situation where you have to make a tough call, but you're happy with whoever it is you've got in the lineup. So, can't go wrong necessarily, but Joseph has done more than enough to stake a claim on a spot on most teams anyway.
Yeah, I'm not a Lightning connoisseur, so I'm just trying to think. Is Tyler Johnson normally a fourth-line center or winger there? Because I'm thinking if he drops back down, Colton slides maybe to the right wing. So I think it's depending on who plays left, center, right. I know Joseph's a winger too, but at the same time, it's a tough decision. But you got to make these tough decisions of winning that Stanley Cup. But Joseph definitely...
Yeah, Tyler Johnson...
go ahead.
As you say, yeah, Johnson goes down to the fourth line to play that center spot, and you go with Colton and Maroon. On the wing.
Yeah, free Matthew Joseph do. Then. Yeah, free Joseph, yep.
Free Matthew Joseph. Man, he's a real nice player. All right, anything else before? We're going to talk plenty tomorrow about Wednesday's game if, you know, the hurricane, the storm doesn't scrub it. But anything else about last night that stood out for either of you two guys? Borny, we'll start with you before we head on to Fridge at the bottom of the hour.
It's just Tampa's power play not getting it done, right? They had 5 power play opportunities. Not many times in a game you get that that's going to happen. So a little love for Montreal's PK. The effort, the work they put in there, really shutting down what I think is probably the best power play in the National Hockey League is one of the stories of the game.
Yeah, I want to know where the outrage was when Vasilevsky high-sticked Corey Perry and made him bleed his own blood again. But I think that's great that they recovered and did what, you know, again, typically when us as analyzers, you know, tell what the Montreal Canadiens need to do, rarely someone goes and does it. They got in Vasilevsky's crease. They got in his kitchen. They started crashing the net. So they're changing up their game plan, and I'm sure they'll be ready for Game 5 as well.
All right, we'll step away. More on this game and a couple of news and notes from around the NHL that we'll get Elliot Friedman's thoughts on, most notably the news outside of the Stanley Cup final right now around the NHL is Seattle's bench getting put together. Dave Haxtell, of course, the head coach. Today, they make it official. Assistants Paul McFarland, who Maple Leafs fans will remember as an assistant coach from about 5 minutes ago, had been with OHL Kingston since, and Jay Leach is an assistant coach now in Seattle, previously being the head bench boss with the Providence Bruins of the American League. Elliot Friedman on all these topics when we return. Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday at noon. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Warren. Pleased to be joined by someone who was up very early this morning to catch a flight to Tampa. He's arrived safely and he's joining us now. He's Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night and 31 Thoughts. Friedge, how are you? How was your flight
early
today?
I'm good, guys. How are you guys? Jeffrey and the Arsonist. It's a good band. I like it.
It's a great. It's a top tune every day at noon here on 590. Jeff and the Arsonists. Here's a sizzling take. There were more than 3,500 people there last night. Confirm, deny. You were in the building, house counter.
There's no way there's only 3,500 in there. You know, it's one of those things. I think people, you know, like I said in the podcast this morning, whoever's responsible for enforcing this has decided they're doing la, 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 la. I cannot see the crowd whenever they're watching the hockey game.
You know, but before we drill down and get into the game and the latest news coming out of Seattle with Paul McFarland heading over to join Jay Leach on Dave Haxtell's bench, give us a sense of the time and the temp, the flavor of the arena, the fans, the whole event. There's Guy Lafleur and Patrick Waugh and Yvon Cornoyer and Montreal wins and it's overtime. Set the scene for us here. What was last night like?
Well, Jeff, I think they're like the 2 days off between games 3 and 4 were a bit of a downer in Montreal. We got into Montreal on Thursday and the city was really excited. They were really energetic, even though they were down 2-0. There was a lot of Habs in six. And, you know, the Lightning owned game 3. They came out right from that opening shift and, oops, that's going to live with me for a while. They came right out from that opening shift and, they owned the game and, They took it right out of Montreal's hands, and the city was kind of down there. There wasn't a lot of people suddenly saying Habs in seven or anything like that. But they recovered for the game last night. The place was energetic. LaFleur, Cournoyer, and Waugh being introduced, I thought really jumped up the crowd again. But I thought Tampa owned that game. For the first 15 minutes, Montreal barely touched the puck. And there were a lot of excuses for Montreal to lose that game last night. They got outshot early big. The two times they scored, Tampa recovered very quickly. There was that Weber penalty going into overtime at the end of regulation. But I think the thing, too, that really stood out to me was whenever the Canadiens fans were given a reason to respond or a reason to show any kind of elation, they were in it fast. When Romanov scored, the building went crazy. Obviously, when the overtime winner went in, the building went crazy. They just wanted something to cheer for, and they were going to respond. And at least in that game last night, they gave them some of that.
Dom Ducharme made some tough lineup decisions, inserting Evans, Kulak, and Romanov, and scratching Kotkaniemi. I wanted to get your take on the scratching of Kotkaniemi, and do we see him in Game 5?
Anthony, you played for a pretty good amount of time. When you guys won, were there lineup changes?
Nope.
So I think we've kind of answered the question here. I am not surprised that Ducharme wanted Evans in the game. I think he really likes Evans a lot. And, you guys have been around hockey long enough to know that you're sitting there as one of the Canadiens' coaches. And I listened to Ducharme's explanation, and the more I listened to it, the more I understood what he was thinking. But what was left unsaid there was, if you're not taking out Kotkaniemi, you're taking out a veteran. And I'm not sure that Ducharme wanted to do that. I don't have any changes with the blue line. I think I thought they had to make changes. And I don't think, if you're not going to have Gustafsson on the power play, I completely understand taking him out of the game. I was shocked about the Kotkaniemi thing simply because I think he's somebody you want as a cornerstone player for your franchise. And I think if that's the case, you want him playing in those kind of games to understand how hard they are. I mean, it worked out, and I do think they like Evans a lot. And the one thing I would say about Evans is that his first game back, it's nothing against him that he was a step behind because he'd been out so long. I was just surprised it was Kotkaniemi. I have to tell you, I don't think I would have done the same thing, and I didn't support the decision. They won the game, and you know what that means, Stewie. He's not coming back for Game 5.
It also is like if he's right? Like that's like a hockey thing, like, Ducharme, they win the game, so Ducharme was right. I'm with you, though. I don't know if I would have done the same. I'm looking for a thought for you on something you've learned about the Montreal Canadiens from the start of playoffs to now, whether that be from, the team's construction or about the coaches or any players. Do you have any sort of takeaways that you feel different about the Montreal Canadiens than you did when it all got underway a couple months ago?
I think the thing that I do believe is that Bergevin bet that if his team, and I've had this conversation with some people who know him, Bergevin bet that his team, if it got into the playoffs, would be a very hard out. And that gamble was proven true. And if you look at this, the NHL is two seasons. There's the regular season and there's the playoffs. And I know some people don't like the fact the game changes so much, but there are other people out there who don't like my take that the thing that changes the most is not the officiating, but the players, because you can't play 82 games like you play the maximum 28 in the postseason. You just can't do it. It's too hard physically and mentally. And Bergevin made that bet, and he turned out to be right about that bet. Justin, you saw how hard it was for them to get in. They crawled in at the end. And look where they are. And they're probably not going to win this series, but, they're here. I just think it's another reminder that in this league, you have to have two teams built. And if you don't have that, you can't win. You have the team that needs to get into the playoffs, and you have the team that needs to win in the postseason. And I think the other thing that we kind of learned is that, Nick Suzuki, he's going to be – I think we all kind of knew it was headed that way, but I think we all know though that Nick Suzuki is going to be a number one center in this league for a long time.
He's going to be a star. And I know it bothers a lot of Boston Bruins fans when I say things like mini Bergeron, or Blues fans when I say, mini O'Reilly, but that's what I see. Like that's what I see in Suzuki, and more so Bergeron than O'Reilly.
And he's too big to be a mini, Jeff. You can't call him a mini. He's too big.
Fair enough. How about Bergeron Light? I don't know. Next Bergeron?
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of trouble for the use of...
I know.
Islanders Light, and then the Canadiens fans were mad because they won and the Islanders didn't. And now the Islanders fans are mad because the Canadiens were getting swept. So, they got to go back to being Islanders Light again. So, Light doesn't lead to a lot of easy times, I have to say.
You started bigging them up, and they lost three in a row.
That's right.
I know all your Montreal friends that are fans of the team are telling you to stop saying anything positive about them.
That's
Montreal
right.
Canadiens.
Don't say anything positive about them.
From the Tampa end of things last night, we just had a conversation about Matthew Joseph before you came on a little bit. On any other team, this guy's probably in your top six. Like on most teams in the NHL, this guy's in your top six. You know, given that there's an expansion draft on the horizon, given that there will be, unless Victor Hedman's going to be next season's version of Nikita Kucherov and he comes off the books after surgery and reappears in the playoffs, there's going to be a cap crunch for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Mm-hmm. What do you think the future for Matthew Joseph is with Tampa?
Well, I just look at it, look at who's not going to be back, right? There's four forwards that we all ask about. One is Coleman, UFA, and he's going to be heavily sought after. Another is Goodrow, UFA, and he's going to be heavily sought after. The third is Johnson, who they tried to move this year for cap reasons, couldn't. But I think after the way he's played this year, and Seattle being a factor since he's from up there, you've got to think if they want to be able to do it, they could move him. And then there's Killorn, who I think they would move heaven and earth to keep. But, that's at least two spots, potentially three. Like you can't tell me that he's not the top guy on the list to move up into one of those spots.
100%.
That play he 100%. Made last night, that's a high-skill play. And it's exactly why you think they're going to find a way to have him in a big spot next year.
I think you had Kucherov as your Conn Smythe winner. So if they close out tomorrow night, who do you have now as your updated Conn Smythe leader in your books?
Anthony, by the way, we've been kidding about, back in the first round after day three when you were calling somebody the early Conn Smythe leader. We were going to refer to that last night, but we thought it was too inside jokey. I just want you to know that we haven't forgotten your day three of 60 leaderboard for the Conn Smythe.
Thank you.
So what I did last night, I don't mind saying it now, is you're allowed to put stipulations on there. And so basically I had something that if the game had gone to overtime and Tampa had won, for example, what would have happened if Kucherov would have scored the winning goal, or what would have happened if Vasilevsky had made a certain amount of saves. But so there were some, you're allowed to do that, but you have to be very clear on your stipulations. I did have Kucherov in the number one spot pending the overtime. We'll see. I mean, I have to tell you, Anthony, if they go 15-0 after a loss and he's got all those wins, it's a pretty crazy stat. Right. So I'll spend the tropical storm over the next 24 hours contemplating this.
Yeah, I'm. It's tight, man. I think either way you go, no one can criticize your pick. I just think the way that Kucherov changes Tampa's power play for me is kind of puts him over the top. But I understand. Either way on that one,
By the way, Justin, yes. Don't kid yourself. Don't say nobody can criticize the pick. There will be plenty of criticism.
Well, of the pick. How about this? No one should criticize the pick.
I like that better.
Recent hires announced kind of just before the show. We knew Jay Leach is going to be an assistant coach, the Seattle Kraken. Paul McFarland joins him there. I'm struck a little bit by the difference in the way that Seattle's going about this than Vegas did. Vegas, you know, George McPhee, been around, and then they go with Gerard Gallant, who, you know, also another guy who's been around for a long time. Hackstall had one head coaching job, and these two assistant coaches are fairly young, new assistant coaches. I know McFarland said a few go-rounds, but what are your thoughts on the construction of the Seattle Kraken's bench?
So, Jeff, did McFarland ever coach a game?
Nope.
He didn't.
So, nope. I mean, that is
He was excited to drive the Shane Wright Ferrari. I know when he took the job, he was like, well, how many chances did he get to coach someone like Shane Wright? Never got to coach a single game.
Unbelievable. I mean, what a life we've all been living the last 17 months. He should say that, retires undefeated. Like, that's what I would I would say. Paul McFarland, undefeated as Kingston head coaches.
Over to you, Corey Cooper, who, by the way, takes over.
You know, I think it's really interesting. I think there were a lot of people who thought Kevin Dineen was going to end up on the Seattle bench because of his long history with Ron Francis, and also because Kevin Dineen had a pretty good record as a developmental person. I know people have felt that he's very good with young players, so I kind of thought that he might end up there. I think it is really interesting. If you see, I've heard, and I have to admit, I'm probably taking a little bit of creative license with this answer, but one of the things I'm kind of thinking is, you know, the word on Seattle is they're going to opt for maximum financial flexibility. Like, they're really not interested in a lot of people who have term, and you're going to have to really pay through the nose if they want them to take someone, and they want to have a lot of flexibility, and they're going to be interested in a lot of potentially younger players. And so you've got a guy from Providence who, and in Boston, is pretty good at the way they try to develop their players. And now you've got another guy who's a young coach who also has a good history of development. You know, that says something to me, that their roster might be a little younger or a little greener. Like, Vegas, and the one thing that I'm trying to be really careful of saying this is that Vegas, nobody thought their roster was that good, right?
No.
And they turned out to be great. So I'm really wary of saying what Seattle's roster is going to be. But I'm beginning to think that, you know, Seattle right at the beginning, they don't necessarily think they're going to get the same kinds of deals that Vegas got. So their road might be a little bit more challenging. And they're going to focus as much about the development of these players as charging out of the gate. I mean, this could be a bad take. But when I see these kinds of hires, that's what I kind of think about. These are very smart people, McFarland and Leach, but they're as much known for their development as in terms of what they've done. But McFarland's also known for his power play. But they're also known for development as much as other things.
Leach is one of, to my understanding, I mean, the list must be small. One of only, I would assume, a handful of players that when he played in the NHL only scored one goal, and the goal was an empty netter.
Well,
I don't know.
Only you would know that.
No, you know, Zach Sinishin is that guy right now with the Boston Bruins, but I'm guessing that list must be minuscule. To have only one goal, and that goal is an empty netter.
How many NHL goals did Jim Vesey, the senior, have?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Because I saw his first NHL goal. It was St. Louis at Toronto, and that was an empty netter. I was at that game in the 80s.
I want to follow that up, what you just said about Seattle as well, but not getting the same deals that Vegas got. Because initially when Seattle was welcomed in, and okay, it's going to be the same situation, same expansion draft format, same player pool, same type of player pool that Vegas had to choose from, although Vegas isn't part of the expansion draft. The hue and cry was, we're not going to make the same mistakes. We're not offering the same deals to Seattle.
We'll see.
That's my question. Because I wonder about, you know, if you're the Calgary Flames, what are you offering Seattle not to take Mark Giordano if you expose them? Like, are now that it's getting to crunch time and actual decision time, are the deals there like they were with Vegas?
Well, I think that the difference now is that I think a lot of people talked a big game and for good reasons. But mm-hmm. Jeff, like, we've seen what's happened with the pandemic. It's constricted the cap, right?
Yep.
So you've got a situation where some teams are going to be forced to do at least consider things they didn't want to do. I still think at the end of the day, they'll say, we'd rather lose one guy as opposed to two, or we'll bite the bullet rather than, you know, this deal with Arvidsson with Nashville and LA, that was a combination time to change our core and fix a potential expansion problem. And they said, we'll take the two picks as opposed to the Kings, as opposed to Seattle getting them. So, you know, I think the one thing I think that these teams are going to do, and we'll find out when we get to this, they'd rather be in a situation where they say either we reap the benefits of flipping the player or we'll just bite the bullet and lose one guy and not walk ourselves into trouble.
We are up against the clock, Friege, but our producer, Matt Marchese, indicates to me that VC Senior,
yeah,
only one career NHL goal, and you saw it, Friege.
Yeah, it was an empty netter, so add it to the list.
Only you would know that, Friege.
I'm 75% nerd that you are. That's what it is.
It's not. Listen, it's not that the meek shall inherit the earth. The geek shall inherit the earth. Thank you
very much.
On that, we'll leave. Thanks, Friege. Be safe.
All right, guys. Have yourselves a great day.
There he is, Elliot Friedman, in Tampa for Game 5 if the hurricane doesn't derail things. More Hockey Central in a moment. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Wrap up in a sec. Okay, just about 60 seconds here. We'll give way to Smith and Jones at the top of the hour. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Merrick, Stewart, and Bourne. Bourne, taking away anything from last night that you think may carry over into Wednesday? If you're the Montreal Canadiens, you're hoping that they get that Carey Price again. Anything else?
Well, just that first goal, right? It's the first game in the series. They scored the first goal. They're able to sit back a little bit, not have to force it and open up. Such a big deal. They're a totally different team when they score first.
Anthony's
I think they paid a little less attention to the extracurriculars. I know it was kind of heated, but not as heated as the other games. Stick to playing hockey. Get some goals. Let's go.
All right, there you go. It's Game 5. Tomorrow we'll see what happens with the storm situation. We hope that everybody stays safe. We hope that it's okay, and we can get a Game 5 in a packed building. We'll see if Montreal can force a Game 6. As Stewie says, let's go. Smith and Jones next on The Fan.